come to order. We have, it is 9:03 on the third day of April 2012. Members present, Representative Newman, Representative Costello, Representative Edgman, Representative Dugan, Co-Chair Thomas Stoltz, Representative Fiara, Representative Wilson. We have a quorum to do business. We have two bills on the schedule, House Bill 256 and House Bill 230. We didn't get the committee substitute quite completed, so we wanted members to have a chance to look at it before acting on it. So we'll bring it up this afternoon, and it should be ready by then. So we'll start right into House Bill 256. Representative Dick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Alan Dick, and I represent District 6. And more than that, I represent districts that are school districts that are remote, and they have primary native students in them. I have a brief summary. We certainly worked over the educational issues in the education committee, and so I'd just like to bring forward just only the most important points that you need to hear this morning.
What's your show? This is the only bill on here. Please don't short shrift your presentation. I know it's one you're passionate about.
Okay, well, the difficult part of HB 256 is that there was only three representatives that had a concern, but the concern we had was major. There was Representative Foster, Representative Heron, and myself. And for other school representatives, this wasn't on the horizon. But for us, for me, it meant hours and hours listening to a cell phone, my cell phone getting hot in my hand as I was lisping. And I don't think any one of us has had more desperate concerns on the part of constituents. So I believe we all have, at least we should have, the HB 256 by Reps Alan Dick and Bob Heron. HB 256 is born out of frustration, conflict, and desire to see low-performing, which we're calling intervention schools, improve. I believe HB 256 brings resolution to any conflict. The key word is collaboration, and that, if we were to listen to all the testimony, that was the missing piece, is that as the Department of Education worked with the districts that were in intervention, the collaboration was the piece that was consistently missing. In the bill, 256, there's 6 points. One is the word intervention has changed to restoration, so it changed the whole mentality. Nobody's going intervening and forcing people to do anything. The idea is how can we restore them? And if I do have the time, I'd
like to. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you.
Define the problem as you, from your perspective.
Thank you. And I believe I can give an illustration that will make the point quite clearly. Years ago, I was hunting caribou, and I saw a bull caribou, and I shot him. He ran over the hill. So on snowshoes, I ran up the top of the hill to see if, and he was down on the other side of the hill. But on either side of that bull caribou, there was a cow. And each one of the cows put their shoulder into him, and they tried to lift him up so he could run again.
You didn't feel bad?
I felt real bad. And I left the cows alone. But that one it left an impression on my mind. And as I think about intervention in the school districts and restoration in the school districts, that's the image I have in my mind, is having other superintendents coming in, people that are out there, people that know what's going on, people that have an understanding of the day-to-day issues, and they come alongside that wounded superintendent, that wounded school board, or that wounded school district, and they'll put their shoulder under it and lift it up and help it to go forward again. That's the image I have in my mind. One of the issues I believe that's, that the interventions districts have dealt with is that I've met with all the board of
Representative Dick, just for the members of this committee and the broader listening audience, can you just describe where these districts are?
Thank you. I should have done that, sir. Originally, there were five intervention school districts.
And give us the geography as well.
The Yukon Koyukuk, which is north of Fairbanks. Yukon Flats, which is also north of Fairbanks, and Lower Yukon, which is multi-Yukon, Upiat School District, that is just upriver from Bethel, and Northwest Arctic, that was up around Kotzebue. Now, Northwest Arctic and Yukon Koyukuk are no longer on intervention. But we did have testimony from those school districts and their experiences. Yukon Flats, Lower Yukon, and Upiat school districts are the ones that are now still in intervention. And Upiat school district, because I know the many of the individuals that are involved in that school district, was the one they were the ones that called me first. And the concerns were great. And I tried for a long time to work with the Department of Education. I tried diplomacy. I wrote letters. I was sent notebooks. I spent maybe 150, 200 hours trying to work out the issues with letters, asking questions, asking pointed questions. And finally, by the time the session came, I realized that diplomacy wasn't an option. And so that's what birthed 256. The department does have a state system of support operations manual. I've read it 10, 15 times. As an experienced Bush educator, I see a few things in here that might help, but to me it's straining out gnats and swallowing camels, that the major issues aren't addressed at all, and there's issues that are maybe important but not really important are highlighted throughout. So part of the problem is the fact that in the State Board of Education, I've met with every one of them. They're all very intelligent, caring, articulate people. But there's one from Juneau, four from Anchorage, one from Kodiak, one from North Pole, and one from Kotzebue, which is not an REAA. That is to say that on the Board of Education for the state of Alaska, there's not one member who lives in an REAA. Bunny Schaefer from Kotzebue represents REAAs, but there's not one that lives in an REAA, and there's no board member who lives in an intervention district. And that, I believe, is the reason why there was no feedback coming back. So one of the points of HB 256 is that the superintendents at the end of the year will, on a survey monkey, will evaluate the Department of Education and Early Development in regards to four or five elements as to whether how well they're being served by the department, because I saw this as a vehicle by which if a district is having difficulty, they can get back to the department and to the legislature. So I thought that was just getting feedback, and if there's positive things happening, that would certainly be on the Survey Monkey. One of the issues.
Thank you.
Oh, excuse me.
President Dick, maybe you are going to get to this, and maybe you assume we understand it, and we don't. Are you going to get to, or if you're not going to, can you explain to us how under the Moore case, the other state schools got off the intervention list, and why the Department of Education says the remaining ones are on the intervention list? If you're going to get to that later on, you can do that later on.
I can do it right now.
Why don't you keep on your presentation?
Okay, I'll keep on going.
But you'll get to that part.
No. Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Could you tell me what the Survey Monkey is?
Oh, just an online survey?
Program call.
That's one of those education technical terms. It's an online survey?
Yes, just an online survey. It's just the intent of the survey would be that at the end of the year, every superintendent in the state could give an evaluation of the Board of Education, the Department of Education, as to how well they've been served, and it could be very positive. This is working well, and the survey would break it down in terms of department. How about the maintenance? How about the instructional support? How about the data reporting, all of that? So the superintendents would be able to get back to the commissioner and the legislature and the governor as to how well the Board of Education is serving the 53 school districts.
So.
Okay, and the problem with the, with the Board of Education, again, they're very intelligent, articulate people, but there are no representatives. And so there was an issue came to my attention where a intervention district was a point of discussion at one of the Board of Education meetings. They weren't aware, and when I spoke with the new Patrick Shire, the new Board of Education member from Juneau, my understanding and his understanding, what he got from that meeting, were totally different. So Point number three is that the Board of Education, if they're going to discuss an intervention district, would involve the school district that's being discussed. They'd have 10 days notice, and they get to participate in the conversation and not just be at a point of discussion. They participate in it. Another point is that the restoration districts must incorporate cultural standards. I think you'll note that all of the intervention districts are have major Native Alaskan population. And 14 years ago, this book was written, The Alaska Standards for Culturally Responsive Schools. 14 years ago, this book was written. And it was written by Native educators, experienced Native educators with doctorate, master's, and bachelor's degrees, people with years of experience of teaching in the bush. And it's tragic that we haven't adopted this and made the use of this, because in HB 256, this would be the foundational document by which, because this is what the Native educators say, this is what will help our districts improve. But instead, the Department of Education has used this state system of support manual that has been in place and has not demonstrated any improvement in the school and the testing. The thing I like about this standards for culturally responsive schools, the first line starts out and says the students will assume responsibility for, and it goes on from there. And it talks about what the students will do, what the parents will do, the educators will do. It's so, when Representative Heron and I read this together, he said, "That's common sense." And I said, "Yeah, that's right. It'd be nice to incorporate that. It's unfortunate that we have to put it in statute." So, as I sat down to come up with an alternative strategy for improving intervention schools, I sat down with former Commissioner Jerry Covey, who was commissioner under former Governor Hickel, and we sat down and we tried to figure out, because he's worked with many of the intervention districts as a consultant. And I confess, I relied very heavily on his input. And so the idea is that in first off, let me read you, if you don't mind, I'll read to you how No Child Left Behind, the sequence of events. In year one, in No Child Left Behind, the district is notified. Year two, students have the right to transfer to a different school. Doesn't do the kids in Hoosie or Allocatic much good. So year three, the students have a right to free tutoring, but nobody even nationwide has made much use of that. Year four, corrective action. The staff or curriculum have to be changed. Year five, restructuring. The district chooses among to convert the charter school, replace the principal and staff, turn over to private management, turn over to the state, and any other restructuring. Well, that takes 5 years just to get down to the nuts and bolts. Under HB 256, the strategy is very simple. First off, this document written by the Native educators, and it would work in Anchorage too. This is very simple, basic, common sense approach to education. And that would be foundational. Year one, an independent expert would come in and evaluate the school district, not just in terms of instruction, but in terms of board governance, in terms of the administration, even in terms of how prepared are the students to come to school, how prepared are they to learn. Maybe the kids are coming at 11 o'clock and not prepared to learn under some condition or another. Nobody has been able to speak to that situation yet. We have districts that are struggling, and sometimes they're struggling because of many variables. One of the variables is, if the kids aren't coming prepared to learn, then how can we address, we can go change the curriculum all we want. This would be one of the evaluative factors. Are the students ready to learn? And in that year, that same year, after this independent expert would evaluate the school district, and the independent expert would be chosen by the superintendent and by the Department of Education collaboratively, and that's been the missing piece in the past. There has not been collaboration. That one coach would be chosen for the superintendent, and one coach would be chosen for the school board, and they would be chosen collaboratively again with the department. So they're agreeing on a professional person who can come in and speak to the situation, evaluate and speak to the situation, and make recommendations. At the end of that year, those coaches give a report to the legislature, to the to the commissioner and to everybody concerned so we can see out there. Maybe the kids are showing up not, again, not ready to learn. Maybe it's the problem is maintenance. The superintendent spending so much time under the building, he doesn't have time to be superintendent because he's throwing out pipes. So all factors that influence school district would be addressed. At the end of year two, an additional coach would be chosen for that school district, for the superintendent and for the school board. So that would be a total of two coaches. The second year, the superintendent gets to choose his own, his or her own, and the school board gets to choose with the advice of Alaska Association of School Boards. So they can get quality people in there. Because some districts, the problem is the school board. Some districts, the problem is the administrator. Some districts, the problem is the curriculum. And so this way, all of those components would be they would be identified and they could be coached upon. In year three, if improvement hasn't been shown, and this is just 3 years and you're already there, a team would be put together. In the third year, there'd be a representative, the commissioner or his representative, somebody from the Board of Education who said, the board says they want to get out there and see what's going on. They want to know what's happening in those remote places. The superintendent himself, somebody from the local board, and the four coaches. And they would come together and develop a three-year plan. And the superintendent's job then would then be, your job is to carry out that plan. Whatever that plan is, developed by those would be eight people. And, okay, so that would be that's the essence, because then it would be all by and for collaboratively with the department and the folks that are out there, people with experience and long-term experience in Alaska, coming up with a collaborative solution instead of somebody from the Department of Education going out and saying, this is how it's going to be. We have an example of the trustee. There was a real source of contention in Upiat School District. The trustee made $193,000 a year, and the contract called for him to be out there 10. He was out there 10 or 15 days a month in Upiat School District. And my best homework shows that there's been no positive outcome from that $193,000 trustee. The trustee was seen as an icon of the department's ability to go in and tell you how to do it. And when I met with the commissioner and the superintendent last June, all the superintendent asked for in a two-hour meeting was, he said, I don't want a trustee, but if I have to have one, give me somebody I can work with. And that didn't happen. So,
can you define a trustee? Is this like a trustee in a bankruptcy proceeding or in a conservatorship? Or how? I mean, give us a little better understanding what the trustee does.
Thank you for the question.
And what the role and limitations or powers are.
Boy, I didn't flag it in here. The best idea is it was kind of somebody from the department, and the department can correct me here, somebody from the department who would oversee and have would have authority over the superintendent in that district, and to be able to direct how many minutes math is going to occur, how many minutes language is going to occur, and like they were in Upiat School District, they wanted to have cultural activities in the school, and the trustees said they have to happen after school. When the department sent a representative to the Upiat School District and met with the school board, they said, "What do you want?" They said, "We want to have our curriculum integrated with our culture." And yet the trustees said any cultural activities had to happen after school because it was a program that they, a curriculum that was being mandated that they had to follow. There was no room.
Mr. Chairman? So just to bite in, then, a trustee is the conduit between the Board of Education and the department. And if I hear your message correctly, you're basically saying this is a top-down approach.
This is a top-down approach. And I Representative Edgman, I tried my best. What I did, if you'll bear with me here, I took the Department of Education State System of Support Manual, and I tried to demonstrate to them that in their working with the Upiat School District, they weren't even following their own manual. I thought that was the best approach I could take. I spent 20 to 40 hours writing, crafting letters, trying to demonstrate that, it was unproductive, and I spent probably 100 hours to find that approach, and it did not work. And so that's where That's where the word collaboration, the collaboration is the piece that was missing. My staff said, we want collaboration, not collaboration. And I thought that was a good line. One thing that disturbed me when I get the fiscal note from the department, it was over, $5,217,000. When I added it up, I came up with $299,264 for 3 years. Well, right now, at $193,000 a year, the trustee is costing, in 2 years, is costing that much. So I really believe that this is a far healthier approach. It's when I discussed the whole the bill with the commissioner, and I put things in that he wanted in here as much as I could. I said, "What do you want? What can we change? How can we make this happen?" I believe that this is the best. I try to model collaboration as we put this bill together. We have a lot. I could have called for more testimony. I believe we do have either Diane George or Kim Langdon online that could testify from UPIT. Many of the other school districts.
I didn't monitor it. We don't have anybody online. I'm trying to get updates for our time management.
Okay. Then we do have written testimony in the packets. My intent was to be brief and to the point here. I appreciate your wanting to dig into the details. I'm trying to be as positive as I'm presenting this as I can. But I can assure you that none of you have had a more desperate constituent issue. And it's just unfortunate there was only three of us that had that have intervention districts.
I think that is fortunate. That is fortunate.
Yeah.
Not all fortunate. We had Representative Thomas, Garrett, and Berg.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of questions. The way everything I've read here, you put all the blame on education, not the parents. And what are you going to do to get the parents to participate, to get their kids to school? Everything that I've seen from the past and reading and listening is, if you don't go to school, you're not going to learn. How do you put the blame back on the parents? And nothing in the bill that I've seen encourages or goes to the parents and drags the kids out of school, including watching state troopers, Alaska state troopers, going out getting kids to go to school. I mean, it's kind of sad to have them on nationwide news or TV. So I see nothing in there, but I think you should probably share the blame with the parents and have that. That's not in the bill. I'm looking at the bill. That we need to go just put something in the bill and go after the parents to participate. We just can't blame the school district or the Department of Education the way I look at it. And the other concern I have is if the intervention districts, we've just been sued by them. We have an $18 million settlement, and just recently, Representative Wilson took some money out of the intervention school districts, and we were threatened to be sued again. Why are we going to jump into this and turn around and give them $5 million? Now I'm looking at the fiscal note, not yours. This is their fiscal note on top of the $18 million. So is this, maybe we'll ask the department if they're going to come up here, but is this on top of the $18 million? And maybe they've taken notes, they can answer that later, the $18 million. And so, we sat here, been sued, and then I noticed there's no sunset, and you referred to a three-year look back and of all the people getting together to look back. It seems like to me that they should look back every year at the end of each year, those group of professionals you're talking about, including the Board of Ed or whoever it is, look at it, and instead of waiting 3 years, we might spend 3 years of wasting money. And the reason, and I look at the fiscal note, not yours again, because that's the one we're looking at. We're not looking at your fiscal note up here. And, we'll be up $15, $16 million by then. And again, this will be a question for education. Commissioner, the trustee reports, are they available? And who is this trustee or trustees? Are they former superintendents? How long do they work in Alaska? What is their experience? You know, and how long did they work with intervention schools before they finally threw their hands in the air? And what took them so long? And were their qualifications was the main thing. But I think this bill puts too much blame on Department of Ed, and not at the local level, the school boards, the parents. And it gives me heartburn to put a $5 million fiscal note out here, you know. Wow. And again, Representative, that's what we're looking at, you know. And I saw your numbers that you had, so somebody has to answer those.
Representative Thomas, to the chair, if I thought this isn't worth $5 million, but it won't cost $5 million. Written right in the bill is this, it says that this document, the Alaska Standards for Culturally Responsive Schools, will be the foundational document upon which all of the restoration will occur. And in that, if I could just make a reference here, has the standards for students, what the students will do, has the standards for educators, how they will perform in a district that has primarily Native students, standards for curriculum, and then the cultural standards for the schools, how the schools will perform, and cultural standards for communities. And it talks about how the communities will, and the parents in the communities will participate in the school. I really do understand your concern, and I tried to indirectly, and I'll be very forthright here. I know in one of the schools, school districts, one of the schools that's in intervention now, the biggest problem is children sniffing gas. I know that. I can't legislate against sniffing gas, but what's in this bill is it refers to the first year that the expert will go in and evaluate on the basis of how well is maintenance going on, how well is not just curriculum and not just the items which are identified here. And the idea then, Representative Thomas, was that report would go back to the governor, to the legislature, and everybody. And if they go in and say, listen, these kids are sniffing gas, and no matter what you do, that is out front. And then the burden of responsibility, and it goes back to the parents. So the response of that evaluator would go right to the parents, saying, your kids are not showing up able to learn. At the same time, at the end of that year, those coaches would have a report, and that, too, would get public. It'd be public. In the end of the second year, again, that would be a public report. Getting back is demanding that every stakeholder in this shows up at the table and responds to it. This is my way of addressing something that was never able to be addressed before. And in the year three, the team is formed. And the whole purpose of the team is that here again, we have participants from the school districts, but we have professionals from around the state of Alaska. You could take a superintendent from Northwest Arctic, and you drop that superintendent in the mouth of the Yukon, and within 2 days, that superintendent can see what's going on, what's right, and what's wrong. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for mentorship and coaching from other districts where they know what the issues are. For somebody to come from an urban place, they might know, they might walk in and not even know that the students are having problems. I'll give you an example in Lyme Village. There was a registered sex offender within 500 feet of the school was giving drugs to little girls for 3 days out of five. I went into the school, and the girls couldn't even sit in their seat. They were so stoned. And the teacher called up for 2 years, tried to get a trooper to come. He almost came once, but he said the weather was bad. That's the type of things we're dealing with in village schools. And that's the type of thing that can be identified and addressed here. The purpose of this was to be totally transparent.
Again, we looked into our packet. You know, when you're making a presentation, we get to read everything else. You know? Mm-hmm. And there wasn't that little booklet. So, you know, when we refer, it's not in our packet. So I don't see, Representative, what you're referring to in the bill.
Okay. Thank you. I should
get us a copy. So we can,
I'd be glad to get you a copy of that packet. But I would also suggest that you read the Alaska System of Support Manual. And I read this manual 10, 15 times, and 25 times in this manual, close to 20, it talks about you'll align your curriculum to the standards. And my question has been all along, when are we going to align the standards to the reality that the students live in? But I asked all of those questions of the department, and this notebook represents maybe 20% of the answers. They're pretty indirect. I, as an educator, did not get good answers. Excuse me, Representative Thomas, what were the other questions?
No, my final question will be, if to me the school boards and the school district sued the state, we gave them $18 million, shouldn't we let that work before we go out there and start doing intervention? And it's a question because, to me, a lot of the problems fall back on the school districts. We've been paying them for years for good education, good everything you're talking about. And I just have, again, looking at this fiscal note, and you have to see where we're coming from. This is what we have. Give me heartburn to add that on top of the 18. Let the $18 million work. If it doesn't work, then come back. But
Representative Thomas, I had a concern because the last year Attorney General John Burns called me over and I talked with Neil Slotnick, and they asked my advice because I have 45 years in the bush, and I have I've been teaching since 1978, and he asked me about the Moore case, Moore versus the state of Alaska, and I sat down, I worked on it with the Assistant Attorney General, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I said, I personally don't think there was no side I could take. I don't think it really, the Moore case itself did not address the issues. So we can wait, we can put this off, and 2-3 years from now we can come back and say, okay, the $18 million didn't do any good because the real core issues aren't being dealt with. When I looked at the Moore case, it's unfortunate that I didn't get to participate with them in the planning of how that money would be spent. But I can't help how they allocated that money. All I'm saying is that if the principles in this simple little document are followed, that we will get results. But if the principles in this are followed, you can do it for another how many years? How many millions of dollars have we spent on intervention so far? And ACT test scores in UPS school district went down for 3 years. Focused, intense intervention, and test scores have gone down no matter how much money you put into it. The coaches, the trustee, etc.
I guess we're in the fog too, Representative, because we know nothing. We've never gotten a what I could call a more report, progressive report coming from Moore. And again, I think that I would shift the blame down to the school board level. They come to Juneau, but I think maybe they don't. They could have been telling us all along when they come up here. But anyway, we'll keep looking at it. This fiscal note does scare me when we have $18 million laying out there.
Oh, I agree with you, but I would ask you to do the math with me, because in the bill, unless the Survey Monkey costs $4.5 million, if we take a look at this bill, the year one, the cost would be for that independent expert to evaluate is $11,200. And also in year one, it says 20 days, that the coaches will be on contract for 20 days. Well, that's both coaches, the superintendent and the school board coach. 20 days at $1,600 a day, which is the price of a consultant, that's $32,000. So $43,200 for the first year. And then for the second year, there's going to be a total of four coaches. So that would be $64,000. $64,000 for the second year. And in the third year, when you come in and create a plan that is actually going to work, different. I'm sorry about the Moore case. I can't help it. I wasn't there. I didn't do it. But I am saying that the team of eight people, if there's eight people meet for a total of 20 days at $1,600 a day, it's $256,000. So this plan right here, HB 256, in 3 years, and I promise you this will bring results when this has not brought anything. This has brought declining, and what this has also brought is contention and strife between the department and those districts that are struggling to try to improve. So the total cost of 3 years is less than $300,000 to implement this for 3 years in each one of the school districts. I'm sorry, I can't help the Moore case. And I understand your problem. If they consulted me in the beginning, I could have helped to redirect that money a little better. because I really believe, I know with all my heart, that the answer for solving the problem, getting parents involved, getting teachers involved in the bush, is that we've got to show the students how what we're teaching relates to them in their daily life and how it relates to their perceived future. When we do that, it'll work, and until that, it won't work. It doesn't matter how many other knobs you turn, how much money you throw over the hill, it will not make a difference. As soon as we can show those kids in the villages that you need to be able to add and subtract fractions. What do I need that for? Well, I've been leveling houses in Bethel, and I with a laser level, and I added and subtracted fractions all day long. Oh, is that what I need it for? And you show them what it's useful for. Then they see the purpose, they see the reason, they'll buy into it. And until we do that, it doesn't matter how much money you shovel over the hill. And I'm sorry about the Moore case.
Mr. Newman and Garrett, anybody else wants to get in the queue? Then my intent to bring the commissioner up next.
I'm fine, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Representative Dick, I've got a few questions, then we'll see which ones we can get through. But I'm concerned about many of the same things Representative Thomas is concerned about. There's a $5 million fiscal note, and I just want to be convinced that we couldn't use $5 million in a better way or less money. And so,
Representative Guerra, if this thing cost $5 million, I wouldn't vote for it either.
Well, is the fiscal note wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
Do the math.
All right. I guess we need to have somebody clarify the fiscal note. Sometimes with legislation, you can make your point and get the department to sort of ship up through the pressure of the legislation. And a couple of things seem free. I mean, one, they're not coordinating with local districts. We could possibly get a commitment with them to coordinate with local districts. That does seem outrageous. There was the example of the person who came in for $180,000 for 2 weeks, and that seems outrageous, and maybe we can get a resolution to that. But in the end, for less money, couldn't you hire better leadership if the leadership is in such a shape that we're going to hire coaches for them? I mean, it seems that for less money, with a little bonus, you could get high-quality leadership that wouldn't need coaches, but instead we're paying for coaches. So that's one question. The other question is, couldn't we use a little bit of money? In Anchorage, we have staff that go out and get parents involved when they're not involved with their kids. And if part of the problem is kids sniffing fuel, you would use them for that. So could we not have, for less money, some sort of parent outreach coordinators to say, look, your kid's doing this, your kid's doing that, and these are things you could do to help. And also, instead of paying for coaches, just hire leadership with a bonus that doesn't need to be coached. And then could we not just put some pressure on the department to get them to stop the two circumstances where you say they've been wasting money? I'm just trying to come up with something that is cost-effective and more effective.
Representative Garrett, to the chair. First off, I also think it's sad that we have to legislate play nice. But I had four meetings with the commissioner between the time of the end of last session and the time when I saw the need to have this bill written. And I was very optimistic, and my optimism faded. And here's my point. The Commissioner Hanley is a very nice man. He has a lot of integrity. But my concern was that this problem has pre-existed Commissioner Hanley. It's gone on for the last three commissioners. There's been a problem with collaborating with school districts. And so what I wanted to do here was it's unfortunate we have to put play nice into legislation, but I wanted to create a process by which that the how districts that need help, it will be consistent and it will not depend on the personality of the person who happens to be the commissioner. I believe that's very important. So no matter who the commissioner is, this is a process that is followed that will guarantee that all stakeholders are at the table and that all stakeholders get to speak to the problem, people that are in touch with the issues that are really going on. actually get to work together at a collaborative solution. Now, you say, why don't we hire a better? Believe me, those school districts are they've already hired the best that they can find. Howard Diamond down in UPS School District. He's married to a Yupik. He's taught in the bush for 25 years between Howard Diamond, Diane George, and Kim Langdon. They have 70 years experience, bush experience, and all three of them are totally, massively frustrated dealing with a department whose sum total of bush experience is somewhere around 3 years, 20 years ago. That's the root of the problem. You know, I've been trying to play nice here, but I'm just saying that there are already people out there that are skilled and good at what they're doing, and that it's unfortunate that that they were not able to be heard. They felt it was totally top down, and that's why I had to put in legislation that which should be common sense. Now, you were talking about parent involvement, and in this state system support manual, it calls for, we need better parent involvement. Well, I asked the commissioner, I've asked them all, well, do you have a plan? You have a suggestion? You know, while your trustee was out there in UPS School District, what did he do that would increase parent involvement for $193,000 a year? And the answer is nothing. There were community events that some of the coaches attended, but there was not one effort on the part of any of the people sent out there to actually initiate a community involvement in any part. And yet it was in the manual. It was in the manual. That's what they said needed to happen. So what's happening here, and it's unfortunate, again, I have to put it in the statute, is that the local people are going to be involved.
Just one final question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So I'll take your word that we have very high-quality superintendents out there, but again, it goes to my question, why do we need to spend money on coaches for them if they're already very good superintendents? And maybe that money could be better used by using folks to outreach to parents to get them more involved. And then some of the bill provisions, I think, with a stare from the co-chair, we could get the Department of Education to do for free. It seems outrageous that they don't meet with the local school district in formulating the plans. But I somehow feel that we could get them to do that. And the whole idea of the $180,000 guy who worked for 2 weeks. Yeah, that seems crazy.
It was year round. I asked the department. What did Daryl Sanborn, and I'll tell you the truth, I like Daryl. If I were hiring a superintendent, Daryl Sanborn would be one of my top five candidates. Daryl Sanborn, I believe, was a successful superintendent. But the role he was put in while he was in UPS School District was that of an enforcer, and that's why the whole thing didn't work. There was division, there was strife, and there's problems in those communities. But we're not even able to talk about those problems because the locals have rallied around the wagon and nobody's saying anything because there's so much interference from outside. We need to have everybody coming to the table feeling like they're participants. Representative Gary, you talked about parent involvement. I believe that there's one thing and one thing only that will actually get parents involved, and that is when we follow this, when we show students that we're actually doing academic activities that are related to the activities in the community, that's when you're going to get parents involved. When your curriculum is involved with having polynomial identities and imaginary numbers and all stuff like that, you're not going to get parent involvement. But if you have activities in that community where everybody can bring a beaver in and, you know, weigh the beaver in, how much does it weigh before you smoke it? How much do you weigh after you smoke it? What percentage of the beaver is edible? How much percentage of the beaver is tail? You know, and how many pounds of beans can you make with beaver tail? I mean, that's the type of thing that's going to get folks involved. I'm pulling that off the top of my head. But that's the type of thing that's going to get people involved. Nothing else will get parents involved.
The question that I was seeking an answer to, though, if you have high-quality superintendents, why should we spend money on coaches for them?
Then I could tell you that why have we spent $400,000 a year sending coaches out to UPS School District when the test scores have decreased for the past 3 years? We have not even got it. I asked for an evaluation of the coaching project. There isn't even an evaluation. I wanted those teachers that are being coached. I would like to see an evaluation by those professional teachers. When you were coached, did it do you any good? I can't get an evaluation. You know why? Because none was ever done. They're just sending coaches out there hoping they're doing well. I would hope that after 3 years of the coaching project, that we would actually have a plan that comes out of that coaching project that we could implement down the road. There is no durable product. We had an evaluation of the coaching project by Education Northwest, but how somebody from Seattle can evaluate what's going on in UPIT, I don't have a clue. I'm saying that we've already poured millions of dollars into those districts following a plan that has not worked. And what this is doing, this is your answer. This is your answer. If you are willing to $300,000 a year, you'll at least identify what the problems are. If your muffler is falling off, we're tinkering with the carburetor, will not fix it. And this will identify what is actually wrong with what's going wrong in the school district and what's going right, how to improve what's right, and how to fix what is wrong. And I believe that the only people that are able to do that is people that have been out there. I could see, for example, in UPS school district, I could see maybe Dr. Norm Eck coming from Kotzebue, coming in and speaking to Howard Diamond saying, Howard, you know, you need to tighten this up. And Howard, that person isn't doing well. You need to get somebody else to do your maintenance or whatever. And coaching that, and, you know, or maybe say, listen, your teachers aren't, they're showing up. Any comment from another superintendent, but having somebody coming from the Department of Education, going there and walking up and down the hall with a clipboard, taking notes, and not even contributing to educate any instruction for $193,000 a year. That is the one that's caused the angst in that school district. That's the one that's caused people heartburn. Yeah, I mean, you talk about heartburn. I can let you talk to folks that have heartburn. We poured how many millions was it? $2.5 million into those intervention districts? And you asked a question earlier, Representative Garrett, how did those other school districts get off of intervention? And the answer is that UConn Koyukuk School District used the PEAK program to get off of intervention. They implemented the PEAK program with federal funds. And when I asked the commissioner how what program that the UConn Koyukuk used to get off of intervention when he let them off of intervention, he did not have an answer. He wasn't even aware of what got him off of intervention. And the way the if I may, Representative Guerra, the means by which people, districts got on intervention was never clear. The means by which districts got off of intervention was not clear either. If you'll notice, Representative Thomas, in the Moore case, they said the lowest 40 performing school districts in the state of Alaska, the lowest 40 are going to get help under the Moore case. And of the 10 lowest, in that lowest 40, 10 of them come from lower Kuskokwim School District. Why didn't Lower Kuskokwim School District become an intervention district? I don't know. They, to this day, have 10 of the lowest 40 school districts. How do you get on intervention? How do you get off of intervention? I would like to suggest to you that the Moore case became a rat's nest. There was contention and bickering and there was strife. And that was at the root of all of this. And it wasn't. That's what caused all of this problem. That's what caused the angst. That's what laid the foundation for the strife that we're trying to deal with now. So, Representative Garrett, I would like to tell you that the means by which somebody got on intervention, I don't know how they got on. There's stories that I won't repeat on the record, but there's districts that say that they have no idea how they get on. That there was other districts that did worse than them that weren't on intervention. So how somebody got on and off seemed to be a rather capricious process.
Okay, we have two more people. Then we've got to bring the commissioner up, Representative Dugan and Wilson.
I'm sorry. I'll have him pick it up for you.
The question is,
as of today.
You know, can I get some sort of microphone that's just sort of clipped to me so
I'm sorry. This is a running joke here. In year one, it says independent expert evaluates. How is the independent expert selected?
In collaboration with between the department and the superintendent. They together would collaboratively decide on who the expert would be.
So that would be, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but that would be the three, the superintendents from the three failing or schools and the, and who?
If a district is in intervention, that superintendent and the department would choose an expert that would come in and evaluate that school district on the basis of board governance, upon administration, upon how the money is being handled, upon the curriculum, upon the teachers, upon the maintenance, and upon how prepared the students are to learn.
So if I just want to understand this, so it would be one expert to go through three schools to answer these questions.
To evaluate that school district, yes. And that would only be, the idea was that would only be 7 days. You could evaluate that in 7 days.
All right, thank
you. I don't know where the $5 million came from.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Wilson, then we'll bring the commissioner up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make sure people understand that there's three intervention districts, but there's only one trustee that's in only one of the districts. So there's not a trustee for each one of them. But the only thing I wanted to ask was, you said Howard Diamond and two others. Could you give me those names again and exactly?
Kim Langdon and Diane George. Between Howard and Dr. Kim Langdon and Diane George, they have over 70 years of experience in the bush.
And what do they do?
Kim Langdon is the supervisor's instruction. He has supervisor's instruction in the UPS school district. And Diane George, I believe, is the assistant superintendent.
And for your info, they're online, but we've got to wait for public testimony before they come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just didn't know exactly.
Now, I'd like to apologize. I came here ready to talk numbers. I didn't. We went through all this in the Education Committee, and it wasn't pleasant. I just was hoping I'd only get to talk numbers. I didn't want to bring all this up again.
That's what's scaring us is the numbers. That's why we need to know what's going on.
Okay, so I would ask you to ask the commissioner where you come up with $5 million.
Right, and that's the goal. You know, Commissioner, we read the fiscal notes. That's our job. So, any closing comments?
If you want an answer to your specific question about where in the bill it speaks to parental involvement, I can answer that if you want. If you want us to respond in writing, we can respond.
Well, you referred to the pamphlet, but I said, that we don't want to read that. So, I read through it. Maybe I just scanned over it. But.
Mr. Chairman, it is in the bill. Okay. Annette Kreitzer, staff to Representative Dick. So we can respond to you in writing, or I can point
we'll
you to your
section.
We'll find it.
But I read your sectional and in the presentation. I didn't see any of that. So, any closing comment?
Closing comment. I didn't want to go there. We really. This has been painful for me. It's painful for everybody. I didn't want to go there. I want to talk numbers. But what I will tell you is that what has gone on up until now has cost millions of dollars and has not produced any improvement in education whatsoever. And I can promise you that if this collaborative process is followed for less than $300,000 a year, that there will be positive results because people will be working together and the people will not be circling the wagons. People will be working together. And I really do believe in math, 1 and 1 is 2. But when people work together, 1 and 1 to be 17, if people just learn how to get along.
Okay, thank you. Take a brief at ease. Call the meeting back to order. We have Commissioner Hanley here. You heard the presentation we got from Representative Dick, and I have to find my questions, but maybe you ought to make some comments first, and then we open up for questions as to what you've heard to respond to.
Thank you, Commissioner Thomas. For the record, I'm Mike Hanley, the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. I do believe the efforts of the department have been mischaracterized. We have had five intervention districts statistically across the nation. Once a district is in intervention, they don't come out of intervention. And yet Alaska is different in that regard. We've built the capacity, and I don't say we, but we have been a part of building capacity to remove two districts from intervention because they have shown improvement. They have shown the ability that they don't need additional support. Even in the UP district, and that has tended to be the primary conversation in regards to today because that is the only district that has a trustee. When we intervened, their scores, 9% of their students were proficient. And sadly, we are up at 19%, not where we want to be, but you know, we have gained about 10% there. Our primary tool in intervention are our coaches. It's not the trustee. It's the first thing we do is we send coaches in to work directly with teachers to build capacity, help them with their aligned curriculum to make sure the curriculum is aiming towards the standards, help them with best practices, scheduling and things like that. But the coaches work side by side with the teaching staff to build that capacity. Our goal is not to go in and tell them how to do it, but to help strengthen the system that's already there. And I think we've shown results in that regard. In regards to the trustee, in regards to the contentiousness, I have not seen that level of contentiousness in any of our other districts except surrounding the trustee. The trustee has very specific authority, and some of his mid-year and end-of-year reports would probably clarify exactly what that is. He only has authority in regards to the curricular activities going on in the district. He doesn't oversee the superintendent. He is out there for 10 to 15 days a month and works directly with coaches, works directly with the teachers, works directly with students, and after that time gives a report to the superintendent, says, this is what I'm seeing, here's where I see his concerns. He hasn't directed the superintendent to do anything in particular. You have to do this, and you can't do this anymore. But he has offered those suggestions. And I do understand that having someone there at that level, no matter who it is, would not necessarily be a pleasant experience. You know, in a sense, it's kind of like being audited, in a sense, or someone overseeing what you're doing. But I will say, speaking to that trustee, Representative Dick suggested that if we had like a NORMAC from Northwest Arctic come down and speak to these three superintendents, that would make a difference. He could offer suggestions. Daryl Sanborn is that superintendent. Daryl Sanborn, our trustee, has worked in the Lower Yukon, Bering Straits, North Slope, Northwest Arctic. He's a respected, retired superintendent here in the state of Alaska. And he also worked in on Alaska and was superintendent of the year. So he is that.
Came 193,000?
This last year was 174,000.
This is retirement?
No. This is a contract, so there's no retirement, no benefits. His expenses come out of that.
Okay, so his travel,
traveling.
Okay.
Right. So $174,000 is a significant salary, I understand, contract. But once you remove all of those things, pays his own self-employment and all that stuff, you can do the math, but it's much less than what it sounds like. But that is those are the primary tools we use. And is it perfect? No. Are we seeing improvement? I think we are. The one thing I have done in response to the meetings with Representative Dick this summer and a significant number of meetings with the superintendents in the UP district, they were concerned about the trustee. And they've been that way since he's been out there. I met with them and I said, well, how about if we do, you know, they asked, can we just get rid of the trustee? And we're in the middle of a Moore case. He said, for the state to fail to take a more directive approach, especially for the children in Yupia, they are failing those children. And so the judge said several times that we need to step in and do more. So in regards to the trustee, my conversation with the superintendents was, how about this? Let's put some measurable goals in place, some measurable student achievement goals in place so we can move forward, and I'll start to back the trustee up. And as you continue to move forward, we'll just continue to remove him. And so I thought that that was a good collaborative approach, a good compromise. And so we started that this spring. And so he was out there in January and February. He has not been out there in March. He won't be out there in April. He'll go out again. He wasn't going out monthly. He'll go out at the end of the year. So in that regard, I think we are working towards building the capacity out there and removing the trustee. When Representative Dick did say that, you know, Howard Diamond had said, I just want somebody I can trust. I asked Howard at that time. I said, Howard, if we're going to work to move him out and reduce his time in UPIT district, do you want somebody new now? And he said, no, I'd rather just work with Daryl. I'd rather start with somebody brand new and then build that up again. Let's just work with Daryl and work with his continued schedule. So I think we have been responsive in that regard. And again, I do believe that's the primary area of contention. We don't see that area of contention in the other districts. There's a lot here, but I'd be glad. I think I'd rather follow your lead in regards to questions.
Okay. We have members who want to ask questions. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, with all the money that we spend on education, lots of different ideas and concepts, I asked you, why could we not implement the proposals put forth by Representative Dick? Some new ideas, some new concepts. I think working more closely with the district. Your comment was that it would soften the existing programs that we've got now. Maybe we need to soften them. I don't know, maybe because of resistance from the districts. Why can't we implement House Bill 256?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, SB 285 a couple of years ago put in place some specifics in regards to how the department, how the state would step in and provide support and intervene in districts. There were things in there in regards to coaches and trustees. There's also an item in there in regards to once a district had shown 2% growth per year for 3 years, there'd be an obligation to step back. Our coaches, which Howard Diamond and the other superintendents out in the UPIT district, they all testified we'd rather have them out there more. They're out there for about a week. They say, yeah, but with travel time, we're missing some days. We want them out there more. So I think they appreciate the coaches. This limits the number of days a coach could be out there to 20 days a year. Our coaches are out there 5-6 days a month throughout the year and working with their trainings, working with their professional development. This also removes the 2% per year growth for students, and it just has an improvement. So you can improve one child. And just to put that in perspective, 2% per year for the UPIT school district, a 2% improvement per year is 6 children. That's it, 6 children. And they're now in the 20, depending on the grade level and the category, either reading and writing or math, they're at the 20% range, 20% proficient. So in the course of 3 years, 2% a year, they could get up to 26% of their kids proficient, 75% of their kids not proficient, and we would still have an obligation to step back. I think that's really low. That's 18 children. That's only 18 children in our district that you have to get to be proficient. This even takes that away. It takes away the 2%. It just is any level of just improvement. And so I think that causes me a little bit of harm. So that's why I think it softens it. Rather than, you know, the coaches we have now, it would limit the amount of time. It seems to kind of restrict them to advisory roles. Coaches to advise is the way it's written. I'm not sure if that's the intent or not, but that was my comment.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Is there any parts of 256 that you would support?
I really don't have a hard time with holding myself accountable, with holding the department accountable, with having superintendents and districts evaluate the department. I mean, I've got an obligation. We all have an obligation. I need to be able to look you in the eye with the role that we have and the actions that we take. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's valuable to have find out why teachers are leaving. So putting together a survey. I don't have a problem with coaching. It's something that we already do. I just think that this becomes even more prescriptive and less flexible when you say only 20 days. But what if a district really has some particular needs and they need more? I do, not in regards to the thing that I support, but the one that I do struggle with the second year, for the district, the UPA district, for instance, they would choose two coaches to advise them on their own, in addition to the first two that they have. They've got three superintendents and three principals for 450 students. That's about the size of an elementary school in Anchorage. And now they'll have four coaches to advise them on how to improve. I don't understand how that. I think Gary kind of mentioned that along the lines with that level of expertise. I'm just not sure what a coach to advise will do. And I think that so there are aspects to it that I think are okay. There's aspects that give me heart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have Representative Wilson, Guerin, Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, the Yukon-Koyukuk is not in the intervention district. Could you tell me why?
Yes, they built capacity. Their scores improved. They're up at over 50% proficiencies now. They're still not where we want them to be, but they've also built the capacity inherently. And so what we did with them, and I had a kind of an exit interview with them, and I said, so what will happen if we step back? And she said, nothing. We're going to continue to do this and this and this. And so the deal that we worked out together was that we would keep some of the coaches out there, allow them to direct where those coaches will be, so not just removing all the support. Carrie Boyd, the superintendent there, was very thankful for that, and allow them to make those decisions on their own rather than dictate the coaches.
Follow-up, sir.
Follow-up.
Isn't she a new superintendent, and is she not one of the biggest reasons why there was a turnover in that particular school district? I mean, it's my understanding she went in hands-on, and she's not been there for years and years in the Yukon-Koyukuk, or am I wrong?
I don't know how long Carrie Boyd's been out there.
Okay. It's my understanding that there was a superintendent difference there, and that's what really turned around the school versus a lot of inner parts of it. On the fiscal note, though, I'm really curious why the department didn't put down all the costs that are currently going in to these districts anyway. I mean, you've got coaches that go into basically only the intervention districts, maybe a few on, but basically that's where the millions of dollars go. We already have coaches for the teachers that are also going in there. None of that's reflected. So this makes it look like this is adding a whole lot of funding when maybe some of that funding is being shifted. Could you tell me why and how much is going currently into these districts because they are intervention districts?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, my understanding is the intent of the sponsor of the bill would be that this would replace our current model. That's what it sounded like, that what we're doing now is not working, and this would be the new model. So those costs wouldn't be there. These costs would be there, so we wouldn't. So that's why they weren't reflected. In regards to the cost of the overall cost of the coaches now,
well, if you're going to replace them, so we would be saving money on one side because you just said that we won't have that part of it, and we would have this. So I'm just trying to figure out what is the real difference financially are we talking about. So how much currently is going into the intervention districts if things say with the trustee, with the coaches, the mentors, specialists, everybody that's now currently coming from the department and department staff that is currently in the interventions?
So, Chair, Representative Wilson, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. Deputy Commissioner Morse, May.
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, for the record, my name is Les Morse, the Deputy Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Education Early Development. I can shed some light on that. This process, actually, when you walk through it the way we read it, it's not just affecting the current three intervention districts. You're going to look at all the schools through an auditing process, and you may be impacting more districts and more schools. And so some of the costs are incurred as a result of that. When you look at that, we're going to be doing the activities outlined in this bill at many school levels, whereas right now we do it only when we intervene in an entire district. So there's a great deal of the costs that are incurred as a result of that.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to get the dollar amount of what we currently spend in the intervention districts, because what we're saying is, that's what I'm understanding, is all the mentors and the coaches and specialists and everything else that trustee that we're currently going in now would be replaced by this. So you're saying, the department's saying, $5 million is what this adds. What I'm trying to figure out is, if we're changing things, what is the savings on the other side, because we're not doing all those that the department currently is. And I know it's in the millions of dollars.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm not going to speculate on that number. I will get you a number and provide that to you. The one thing that I want to be cautious of is I need to go back and analyze the statute to make sure things aren't changing that we currently are obligated to do with those completely. This does change parts of that statute. It doesn't necessarily change all parts of that statute. So I'll go back, I'll do an analysis, and we'll get you a number, a figure, and we can do that as quickly as possible.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, when we're going to have these kind of fiscal notes, I think there should be some place, and I'm not sure where in the note fiscal note should be, but if there's savings in other areas so that we know what the difference is. Thank you.
I'm surprised there isn't. Representative Garrett and Dugan.
Thank you. Just very briefly, we would like to know the additional cost of this bill compared to what's being spent now, right? That's what the fiscal note should be, and so thank you for getting that to us. There seem to be a couple things that could be done for free by the department if you were willing to do it. One is the Representative Dix says there's been no coordination between the Department of Education and the local school districts, and he'd like 10 days' notice so they can participate. Is that something you could commit to do?
Since Chair, Representative Garrett, we've already committed to do that. And, in fact, intervention districts come up on a regular basis at every school board meeting, just an update on how they were, on how they're doing.
Okay. One, through the chair, one example that Representative Dick mentioned was that there was a trustee who would show up for a few weeks and cost the state $180,000 a year. Can you shed some light on that?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Garrett, and I did mention briefly what that trustee does. He's out there for about 10 to 15 days a month. So it's not just a one-time shot. He's out there on a regular basis, working directly in the schools with the staff out there. Was that the question? Was how long he's out there? And then his contract this last year turned out to be about $174,000, and that was with no benefits or anything else.
And then finally, through the chair, what can you do for us in terms of the key issue that Representative Thomas mentioned, which is increased parent involvement. And let me ask you a second part of that. Would you be willing to implement the cultural teaching standards that are discussed by Representative Dick?
Through the chair, yes, the cultural standards are already out there. They're not. We don't see them in the statute to say you have to do them. It's best practice, I think, especially in Alaska. They're out there to districts now for utilization and to be used. We could be more assertive in how those are used. In regards to parent involvement, it's an interesting thing to say, I would like somebody from outside to come in and tell me how to involve my parents. It's an interesting, you could have someone come in and suggest it, but more often we're criticized for having someone come in from outside and tell them how to do something, especially in regards to how to best engage a community. That really seems to be a prime focus. It is part of the job description of superintendents and even principals, to engage community, engage families in your children's learning. I'm sure supportive of the concept. I'm just not sure that the state is well equipped to come in and tell a small district, you know, I know what's best, I know how you can engage your families in a way that somehow wouldn't be already inherently known in those communities.
Thank you.
Those things also could be implemented through the more settlements, some of those interactive things that families could be involved with. Or already could be incorporated.
Something in that regard seems important.
Yes, I agree.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the questions from Representative Wilson has answered one of my questions, and thanks for getting in ahead of me. But the other question is this. There's mention of a, basically, I think it's a textbook. I'm not sure exactly what it is called, Alaska Standards for Culturally responsive schools. And I'd like to know what you think of that, and if not you, whoever would be appropriate to answer that question, because at least the question, the statements here make it seem as if this is not being used in terms of the three districts that are under fire here, basically. And so I just like to know, why not? You know, is there some problem with this that we won't find out about in the normal course of events? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Through the Chair, Representative Dugan, the cultural standards for students and for teachers was adopted by the State Board of Education already. They are out there to be utilized to the extent that they are actually incorporated. We don't monitor that regularly. That is a responsibility of local districts. They are slightly different than what we talked about previously in regards to the student standards. The cultural standards are more a way of teaching, and responsibilities that a student should have, not necessarily easily measurable, but they are a way of sensitivity to different cultures and understanding ways of knowing and teaching and interacting. Very valuable document. I wholeheartedly agree with Representative Dick in that regard. But we don't go out and mandate that those are done. And even if we did, it's tough to measure quantitatively how those are incorporated.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't understand the last part, because it seems to me that it would be pretty easy to measure whether or not cultural standards that are suggested here are being used. You know, I'm not trying to say this is the Bible or anything. I haven't even read it. But if, in fact, it is something that talks about the proper way to integrate cultural standards into learning, then I'm going to want to know why it's not being used, because it seems to me that in a situation like we're in now with these three districts, we'd want to use every bit of firepower we have to help the students in that district get a better education, or a more culturally appropriate education, or however you want to phrase it. Thank you.
To the Chair, Representative Dugan, you and I would agree wholeheartedly on that they do need to be used, especially when we're looking at teachers who tend to not be from those communities. It is very important that they have the cultural sensitivities and they understand these cultural standards so that they can interact effectively with their students.
Thank you.
But they do have the option to adopt them now.
They have been adopted by the State Board. They're out for implementation.
Okay. Yes. Representative Antrim, then we'll go to public testimony.
Okay, very quickly. Representative Dugan just covered my question, but just as a brief statement, I want to say that I'm intrigued by what Representative Dick is bringing forward. The talk we heard from the North Slope Borough as well, what they're doing, sort of a theme-based education approach, the lack of understanding of what a CURB was and this, that, and the other. And, of course, I'm from rural Alaska. I've seen people come and go all the time, and they don't spend enough time to really understand who the people are in the village, the hierarchy, the way things work, and this, that, and the other. So I'll close by saying that I'd like to have more discussion at some point on this whole theme-based approach and implementing more of this culturally responsive school process. Thanks.
I think you'll get your chance. People who are online fell off, so we'll just leave this open, not have public testimony. But it was interesting that it seemed like last week people were telling us that, you know, they have the responsibilities and, you know, we can't tell them what to do. And, you know, they can't tell the Board of Education what to do. We can't, you know. Now this week they're asking. My question, Commissioner, and maybe take the attorney, is what I was saying earlier when we cut some money out of the budget, we were threatened to be sued because we were breaking the MORE Act. Now if we're going to add money to the MORE Act, it seems like to me you can't have it both ways. But if, you know, the MORE case, if we're taking it away, we can't, you know, now we're going to add to it. Isn't there a problem here, too, that somebody set a plan in place and is going forward, and now we're going to jump in the middle of this whole plan that they've got and mess that up, too? I mean, maybe we need the attorney who was involved in this and say, yea or nay, because it seems to me if they're on a track and they've been established by the courts to go this way, and then we're going to intervene and tell them, no, this is the way, you know, we want to do it. So.
Yeah, Chair Thomas, that's correct. And the way I read this is that the Moore settlement would operate side by side with this. This is relatively prescriptive. And so the grant funding in the Moore settlement would not be necessarily be able to be used here. This is kind of set aside. So it would be on top of what is incorporated into the Moore settlement.
And we don't know, or do you know, if the attorneys for the Moore settlement would be happy with this? I mean, again, it seems like we're trying to get involved in something that we weren't involved in.
Right. And I don't know. That's a good question. I would have to check with them. And they're not necessarily synonymous. The Moore settlement tries to allow districts to address their needs and build up capacity in certain areas. This is very specific.
We're addressing intervention districts. That's how you get the connection there, is where I'm looking at it. And we're going to intervene to the point that we're in trouble again. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, just quickly, I think we need to also understand how this committee that's going to be put together because of the settlement, you know, how does that deal with the intervention districts separately than what, because that committee will be outside of the Department of Education of what you're doing with the intervention districts. And we're talking about more than just the trustees. What if these scores keep down at that level? As you said, even the best case scenario, we're looking at 75% failing, 25% just being proficient, and that's still pretty low. But all those parts put together, I think it's we need to know how those are going to fit so next year we know what questions to be asking and who's responsible for what.
I'm just afraid more criticism about us not working with somebody else who's working elsewhere. And again, I don't know who they are. So we'll be setting this bill aside, and again, you know, people fell off that we're going to testify. So we got session. We have session at 1:30 this afternoon. Our committee meeting, anyway. 1:30 here. Oil gas production. HB 276, HB 310, and HB 296. So.
And Mr. Co-Chair, we had a delay in getting the committee substitute for
3:30
out. So we'll hopefully add that. Do our best we can to keep that.
Okay, so with that, we are adjourned until this afternoon. Thank you.